Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's time for this week's Images of the Past, and what a story we have for you today. With us from Custer on the phone, Gary Enright. He's director of the 1881 Courthouse Museum in Custer. Gary, welcome back.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
And we start with Aunt Sally, Sarah Campbell, an amazing story. I can't even believe I've never heard it before. Well, where do you want to begin with her life?
We could actually start, I guess, at 1823 when she was born in Kentucky. She was born as a slave. Her mother's name was Mary Ann, and that's all we know. Her name was Sarah, and she didn't actually acquire the name Sarah Campbell until years later when she got married. That was the first time she had a last name. So it was kind of a time that was very common. One of the things that did happen in her life when she was quite young was that her mother's owner actually said that when the mother, Mary Ann was her name, when she passed away, that the children would all get their freedom. Well, everybody was excited about that, but it didn't happen. And so as a result, somewhere around 1834, when Sarah was 12 years old, she was sold to a man who owned a riverboat. And he was a cousin of the fellow who founded Fort Pierre in Dakota Territory. And so he had a job of hauling material up to Fort Pierre in the Dakota Territory to be sold to the people who were moving westward and all of that sort of thing. And he put this 14-year-old girl to work in the kitchen of a riverboat, and her job was to be the cook.
All right, and so at this point, her mother's gone, and she leaves everything she knows and heads out on this steamboat. Remarkable.
That's right, and she must have been a very bright girl, because at that age of 14 or 15 years old, it came to her conclusion one day that, why am I still a slave to this man who owns me when I don't live in slave territory anymore? I'm on a riverboat up in Dakota Territory, and that's a free area. And apparently she sat down one day with a lawyer who was on the riverboat traveling, and she told him her story. And he said, the next time I'm down in Missouri, where they tend to take care of these sort of things in the court, I will appeal to the court to see if we can get your freedom and if we can get some financial remuneration for you for your years of slavery. And oddly enough, he did that. Total stranger. And that changed her life forever. And some months later, he was on the riverboat again, and he carried with him a court order that freed her.
Wow.
And this was still in the late 1830s, so slavery was still in effect for another 30 years.
And all right, did she get money? There was money involved
here.
Yes,
she got 1 cent.
What? Oh, no.
That's what the court awarded her for all of that. But she had her freedom. And the first chance she got, now that she was free, when she got to the little bitty town up in the northern part of the Dakota Territory called Bismarck, she got off of the boat and moved into Bismarck and went to work making a living.
Wow.
And she was just a teenager, probably 15, 16 years old at that time, and she did everything she needed to do to survive, and that was babysitting and being a midwife and taking in people's laundry and patching and making clothes for sale and all that sort of thing, everything that she could possibly do. And she did this for many, many years until about 1872, when the United States Army built a fort just across the river, and it was called Fort Abraham Lincoln. And she went over there because they hired laundresses and cooks and midwives for the wives of the soldiers and all of that. And she then became very deeply involved She already owned quite a bit of property in Bismarck. She was an entrepreneur, no question.
Right. And she could own property.
Yes. Well, at that time, she was free, so she could. She could own property.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I still want to know what she did with that scent, though. I really want
to. You know, I thought about that when I was writing this and doing the research, and I thought, you know, if there was one thing that I would have kept in my purse or my pocket, it would have been that penny.
I'd have sewed that into my dress. Yeah,
exactly. You're right.
Well, how do we know about her? What kind of records do we? When does she start? You know, showing up in the historical records?
What really started her out with a direct relation to this part of the country, the Black Hills, was that there had been rumors for a long time circulating around the country that there was gold in the Black Hills far before General Custer came here in 1874. So when it was announced that the 7th Cavalry, which was under General Custer at the time in Bismarck, or across the river from Bismarck, was going to do a trip to the Black Hills in a Black Hills expedition, and she went over to the general. Apparently, she wasn't a bit timid. She went over to the general and said, I would like to hire on as a cook or a seamstress or whatever it takes. And he hired her to go on this expedition to the Black Hills. She was the only woman. 1,100 men, soldiers and teamsters and gold seekers and other people, newspaper reporters, all of these people that made up the expedition of 1874. And here she went along on the ride. Well, here is another case of this woman being very outgoing. She became friends of Horatio Ross, who was the man who discovered gold in the Black Hills in August of 1874. And she was one of the 10 people who filed a claim on French Creek in what is now Custer, South Dakota. She was the first woman ever to have a gold claim in America. Even the 25 years before out in California, they didn't have any women who actually had gotten claims filed as far as their gold mining their idea was concerned. So, as a result of that, she was written up in the Chicago newspapers about being the only woman who ever had a gold claim, and here she was out in the Black Hills of South Dakota, and isn't this wonderful? They've got all this gold out here, and everybody should come to the Black Hills.
There's just one picture of her. Do I understand that correctly? We've got one.
One, yeah. And that picture was taken in downtown Deadwood. And the reason for that was that after she discovered gold in Custer, South Dakota, she never really came back here, but she did come to the Northern Hills a year later when gold was discovered up in Deadwood Gulch. And so that's where she set up the rest of her life. And she bought a ranch. She would buy cattle from cattle drives that came through the Black Hills, and she would sell the beef to the miners. And she was an entrepreneur. This lady was something. She was something else. And she lived there the rest of her life. She came to South Dakota at age 51, and she actually lived to be 64 years old. And she is buried in Galena, which is a little town just outside of Deadwood.
And here, you can go and see images or pictures and this whole story online at sdpb.org/images-of-the-past. It closes, Gary Enright, with a little bit of someone in Rapid City who keeps that story alive. Well, that must be a fun presentation to see. Who is that?
We've had Joyce Jefferson come to the museum here in Custer, and she has presented. She is a reenactor of Aunt Sally, and she does do a marvelous interpretation of that woman's life. And that's where I got started in trying to follow this lady's life and find out more about her, was when we had Joyce Jefferson come and speak here.
Well, we'll have to have Joyce on the show sometime as well. What a fabulous story, Gary Enright. It is always a pleasure to have you on the program. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Laurie. I appreciate it.
And you can find that once again on our website, sdpb.org/imagesofthepast.